Maybe it's a mistake if we let the clock break everything in my mind. Everything in my mind is telling me that it's a mistake. And it ends in heartbreak. Everything in my mind. Everything in my mind is telling me to try to turn back time and make it all alright. Only a piece of you and me will keep me warm all night. But if I could turn back time and rewrite every line, if only I could.
Escaping the Paradox by Mary, read by Patika. Summary. After Harry is thrown back in time to 1971, he has several choices to make. Prologue. Peterson, what do we have? Morgan sent me out to help, said Harry, crouching down beside him. The air had that moist dirt smell of rain. They were just beyond the wards of a run-down cabin in the forest of Dean. Milt Peterson shot him a grateful look. We got a hostage situation. We think they're attempting a blood ritual to activate the device they nicked from the Dark Arts relic dealer. Harry's stomach tightened. Fuck! It's some kind of time device, isn't it? As far as we've been able to figure out from the few scrolls we found on it, we're not positive about what it does, but we're pretty sure it could transport a lot of people if they trigger it in a crowded place. It started to drizzle, and Peterson looked up at the sky in disgust. I doubt we can use a rain-away spell right now. Probably not, Harry agreed. Too likely to be detected. I've heard that the device needs a lot of dark magic to get it going. More than those idiots have, for sure. And that's the reason they need the hostage and the dark ritual. We need to think about moving in on them. Peterson looked up at the sky again. Aside from everything else, I have a date tonight. Harry laughed. Me too. Hardly counts if you're engaged to the witch. Don't let Ginny hear you say that. She's expecting dinner out tonight. Harry smiled and patted his pocket. We're going to look for a house tomorrow. Well done, Peterson grinned. Finally set a date, have you? Next summer. It started to rain harder, and Harry looked back at the cabin. We'd better get to it, or we'll both be keeping our ladies waiting. Where are Johnson and Pickering? Around the other side of the cabin, just beyond the wards. They want to try and take down the wards. It's not like they can do that and not alert them that we're on the way. Harry wasn't sure he could do it, and he was stronger than all of them. Probably put together. Maybe I can press a stunning spell through the wards. Peterson nodded. We should try. A scream rent the air. Fuck! Harry raised his wand. Stupefy! He pressed his power into the spell and towards the cabin. The whole thing was engulfed in light, and the wards fell. Let's go! He and Peterson ran for the cabin, and Johnson and Pickering came from the other side. Pickering got there first and kicked in the door. A witch was lying on the floor, a knife through her chest. Two wizards were lying beside her. The device was sitting on the table, smoking. As Harry came through the door, his wand raised, the device exploded outward with a high-pitched sound. A beam of blue light shot straight out. It hit Harry mid-chest, and he didn't have a second to open his mouth to scream before the world went black. Part 1. First Year. When Harry came to, he lay still, trying to assess the situation. There was a slight breeze blowing, and it was warmer than it had been in the forest. He was lying on the ground, outside, rather than in the cabin. "Are you all right?" an eerily familiar voice asked. Harry opened his eyes, and then closed them again. Oh, sweet Merlin! Albus Dumbledore stood above him. But not the Dumbledore he'd known at school, or even the one from his time at King's Cross. This one was visibly younger, though how someone that old could look slightly younger, Harry wasn't sure. One thing was immediately apparent. The younger Dumbledore didn't dress any better than the older Dumbledore. That shade of lime green could blind a person if they looked at it for too long. "What happened?" asked Harry. "Am I dead?" "I don't think so. Not unless I am as well." His voice was too amused for him to actually be thinking that he was dead. Better not tell him that, as far as Harry knew, he was dead. It might upset him. Harry opened his eyes again, praying he was ready to deal with this. He was lying at Dumbledore's feet in what appeared to be the garden beside the castle at Hogwarts. "Are you injured? Can you move?" Dumbledore crouched beside him and put a hand on his arm. It was solid enough. Harry tried to sit up, and while he managed to make his muscles obey him, they didn't do it willingly. "Ugh. Where did you come from?" The question was casually asked, and Dumbledore's eyes were twinkling, but that didn't negate the subtle demand for an answer. Harry wanted to answer him, a feeling he knew was foreign to him, and something he could resist without much difficulty. "Where am I?" Dumbledore's eyebrows rose a bit. "Have you never learned not to answer a question with another question?" "You wouldn't be the first person to mention that. Maybe the better question would be, when am I?" Which is as much as he was going to give until he knew what was going on. Dumbledore's smile faded. "It's August of 1971, and you're at Hogwarts School for Witchcraft and Wizardry." 1971? Oh, fuck! All the air raced out of Harry's lungs. God, that was, what, 9 years before he'd been born? How in all seven hells was he going to find his way home? That time device would likely require another blood ritual, and time turners only went one way. He'd probably have to find some other kind of device, if one actually existed. He was so screwed. "Are you all right, my boy?" Dumbledore's voice dragged him back to the present. "Yes," Harry gasped. Of course he wasn't all right. Probably wouldn't be for a long time to come. He needed Hermione, who was out of reach, and so was Ron, and Ginny, and everyone and everything he'd ever known. "Do you wish to lie down?" Dumbledore sounded concerned enough that Harry wondered what he looked like. Sweat was starting to form at the small of Harry's back and under his arms. He wanted nothing more than to lie back down and wake up from his nightmare at home. "I'm already on the ground." "I was thinking more in terms of the infirmary, though Madame Pomfrey, our Mediwitch, hasn't arrived yet." Unfortunately, there wasn't anything in the infirmary that was going to help him. The library, perhaps, but he was pretty sure he wasn't going to get to that anytime soon. "I think some tea might be a good idea, or maybe a drink." "I think I can offer both. Let me help you up." He took Harry's arm in a surprisingly strong grip and helped him to his feet. "Thanks." Harry swayed a bit and then steadied himself. He followed Dumbledore into the school. His legs felt like lead and he tripped once, but Dumbledore caught him. Dumbledore got him into his office, which looked remarkably similar to the one in Harry's time. He waved Harry to a seat. "Tea?" "Please." Harry would have killed for a cuppa right now. "Digby!" Dumbledore called. A house elf popped into the office. "You is needing something, headmaster?" "Could you bring some tea for me and..." Dumbledore paused, clearly waiting for Harry to fill in the blank. "Potter. Harry Potter," he said without thinking. Fuck. Telling Dumbledore his name might have repercussions in the future. Like when he came to Hogwarts, or even sooner when he was born. God, he was going to have to watch every word he said to anyone in this time. And that had never been his forte. "So it would seem," Dumbledore muttered, turning back to the elf. "Some tea for me and Mr. Potter." The elf was quick, Within a few minutes, Harry had a cup in his hands. He took a slow sip, letting the caffeine and warmth seep into his system. He still half hoped that this was a dream he'd actually wake up from. "Would you care to tell me where you came from?" It was a bit more subtle this time, but Dumbledore's tone had that bit of push in it that begged an answer. "You probably wouldn't believe me if I told you. And I'm not sure it would be a good idea if I did." Harry didn't know a lot about paradox theories, but he was pretty sure that he needed to be away from this time before he was born into it, or something awful was going to happen. Just thinking about it made his head hurt. "Perhaps. Who are you?" "I told you, I'm clearly a Potter, and a powerful one at that." "You can tell just by looking at me?" Dumbledore chuckled. "That you're a Potter? Absolutely. It's written on your face." "No, I meant that I was powerful." He wondered if Dumbledore thought he was a threat, which would make sense. "That too," Dumbledore said, and met his eyes, pushing again. But it was clear he expected to be repelled, which Harry did. "That just means I know some occlumency." "As I said," Dumbledore said, sitting back in his chair, "since it's common knowledge that Ignatius Potter had several illegitimate children, I can only assume you're one of them." Dumbledore was giving him that. Harry nodded. "Yes, that's right. I was educated at the Salem Institute in the States." "I'm surprised you retain such a distinctive accent." "Bugger. I came home every summer holiday to stay with my mom until she died. She was a muggle." "Ah, so you're familiar with the muggle world?" "Very much so." Harry had a feeling that Dumbledore knew he was lying, but he couldn't quite pinpoint why. "Why do you care?" "I could be looking for someone to teach." Dumbledore paused, clearly having to think about it. "Muggle studies." "Why tell me?" "Do you have a job yet?" Dumbledore's eyes had the glitter to them that always made Harry wonder what he was thinking. "I just got here." Harry closed his eyes and then opened them again. "Forgive me for being blunt, but what is going on here?" "Perhaps this could be beneficial for both of us," Dumbledore said. Harry couldn't fathom what he was thinking, why he would take such a risk. He said nothing, waiting. Dumbledore wasn't smiling now. "I find out who you are and why you're here, and you get a job and a place to stay." "You want to make sure I'm not a threat, don't you?" That was a lot more consistent with the Dumbledore Harry knew. "I could still be a dark wizard or just mad. How would you tell?" "I sense that you are neither, but I'd like to make sure." In the past, it had served him well to trust Dumbledore, but he couldn't quite believe what he was hearing. It was just too perfect. "Why help me at all? Why not just watch me?" "You appear to come through a portal which closed behind you, into thin air. I'd like some explanation. I don't believe things simply happen without a reason." Okay, so clearly he knew something was up. Unfortunately, it wasn't what he was hoping for. Harry couldn't help him this time. Dumbledore waved his hand. "Tell me what you can." "We were working on a dark magic case with a magical time device triggered by a dark ritual." "We?" "I'm an Auror." "I would have said that you don't look that old." "I'm 23. Harry met his eyes, and even though he knew it wasn't possible, it seemed that Dumbledore looked through him. "But looking into your eyes, I can see you're much older than you look. Much older than 23. What have you seen in your short life?" "Life and death and everything in between." But Harry wasn't going to tell him that. "I shouldn't be here." "I gathered as much. But unless you can tell me more than that, I can't help you." It was clear that for some reason, Dumbledore did want to help him. Maybe you shouldn't trust me. You don't know me. And no, I'm not ready to talk about it. Perhaps when I have more answers myself. Dumbledore nodded. Fair enough. One of Harry's strengths was the ability to make a quick assessment of any given situation. Right now, he could detect nothing from Dumbledore that set off his alarms. Getting home would not be an easy task, and he needed a job to survive. Harry sighed. I'll take that job. I'm assuming it will give me access to the restricted section of the library. I have some research to do. One thing. If you take the position, then I would ask that you not leave until the term is done. It's difficult to find a teacher mid-year, Dumbledore said. I agree. All that research would probably take him most of the way through the term anyway. He missed Hermione even more. But she'd be really proud of him when he figured it out on his own. And thanks. Diagon Alley seemed different. Still bustling with activity, but older looking and a bit shabby. Everything had been rebuilt after the war, as if putting a shine on things could make things better. Perhaps it had. As Harry walked along, he recognized no one, but several people did a double take when they saw him. Madame Mulkins was still right on the alley. "Sir," she said brightly as he came in, "what kind of robes can I show you?" "I need several sets of good quality teaching robes." When he'd been taken, he'd had enough galleons shrunken in his pocket for a down payment on a house. Merlin, Ginny was probably worried sick about him right now. His chest tightened. When he got home, he'd make it up to her. "Are you teaching at Hogwarts, then?" she smiled. "A Potter?" "Yes." He was surprised she'd asked. "Harry Potter. I'm teaching Muggle Studies." He'd looked over last year's curriculum and decided not to change it much. The lesson plans were another issue. They were all due to Dumbledore by the end of the week, and he hadn't even started on them. He'd already made one trip to Flourish and Blotts for books on Muggle culture. Unfortunately, the truth about the Muggle world, from telephones to television, had been inaccurate enough that he'd recognized it as such. Another trip to the bookstore was in order today. "What do you think of these?" She had brought out several styles of robes in several colors. Merlin, did anyone actually wear that shade of teal to teach in? His first thought was for Gryffindor colors, but he was teaching all houses. How about the dark red and dark green, and maybe black? "Very good. Why don't you hop up on the dais here, and I'll fit you." She knelt and pulled out her wand to charm the hem. "Will you be needing other robes?" "You know, I probably will need some. Maybe some plain day robes? In the same colors?" He should probably go into Muggle London for jeans and trainers. Or maybe a jumper or two. As much as he complained about them, he missed the warmth of Molly's jumpers. When he got home, he'd never complain about them again. "I'll have these sent up to Hogwarts?" She was already moving away towards the back again. "I have several other styles." The door opened, and a thin woman came in with a small boy. They both had greasy hair and patched robes. There was something vaguely familiar about them, but Harry couldn't place it. "Mrs. Snape." Madame Mulkin's bright tone had become edgier. "I'm sorry, I haven't been able to find second-hand robes to fit the boy." Eileen Snape, which made the little boy... Oh, fuck. As he watched, her shoulder slumped. "I can't... I know, I'm sorry. I wish there was something I could do. I've asked around, but... Maybe you can find something at Oxfam?" "Thank you anyway," she said, defeated. "I'll have to charm my school robes to fit him." "What if he isn't sorted?" "Oh, he'll be in Slytherin. Eileen said, as if it were a foregone conclusion. She didn't smile when she said it. Snape was looking at the floor, like he wished it would swallow him up. Harry knew that look. He'd felt it so many times as a kid, when he wanted something and it was denied. Embarrassed for the poor boy, Harry cleared his throat. "Oh, Mr. Potter, I'll be right with you." Madame Malkin hurried off. Eileen turned towards the door. "Come along, Severus." "Mrs. Snape?" Harry said. "I'm Harry Potter. You probably don't remember me, do you?" She looked wary and tired, like she couldn't deal with much else. "No, I'm sorry, I don't remember you." "Years ago, your father was very kind to me. He helped me out of a situation." "What was that situation?" Snape asked, his tone clearly saying he knew Harry was lying. "Hush, Severus," Eileen said. "What can I do for you?" "I'd like to return the kindness. Can I pay for Severus's robes?" "Why would you want to do that?" She didn't ask what was in it for him, but it was pretty clear from the look on her face that she was thinking it. "I believe that if someone is kind to you, you should be kind to someone else." And while he didn't care that much for the man this little boy would become, he owed him more than he could ever repay. One of the things he'd regretted when all was said and done was that he'd never got a chance to make peace with Snape. Snape snorted. "You should be kind to the person that was kind to you." "Well, your grandfather was kind to me, but he's not here. Will you allow me to pass the favor to you?" He smiled his best smile at her. Madame Malkin came back in. When she caught sight of Eileen and Severus still standing in her shop, she looked a bit annoyed. "I was just telling Mrs. Snape that it would be an honor for me to see Severus outfitted for school." Both Eileen and Madame Malkin choked. "Thank you," Eileen said. "What do you want in return?" Snape asked, radiating suspicion. "For now, nothing. However, if you want to do something, you can do well in your classes, and I'll consider it repayment." "I can't believe you don't want something more than that." Snape folded his arms over his chest and gave a pretty good imitation of his nasty teacher scowl. For some reason, it made Harry feel even more sorry for him. "Sometimes that's enough," Eileen said, and turned to Madame Malkin. "One set of school robes, if you please." "Actually, why don't you let me outfit him with everything he needs? He's probably growing so fast that you have a hard time keeping up." He looked over at a stunned-looking Madame Malkin. "Can you put a charm on the robes so that they last for the whole year, even if he hits a growth spurt?" She nodded. "It costs a bit more." "That's okay." Snape's expression was pure suspicion as he stepped up onto the dais, but Eileen looked grateful. Harry could live with that. "You asked to see me?" Harry said, coming into Dumbledore's office. The message had been a bit too cryptic for him to figure out if he'd done something wrong or not. He couldn't think of anything he might have done, but that didn't mean he hadn't violated some unwritten rule. "I understand that you bought new robes and books for Severus Snape this afternoon." Dumbledore waved him to a seat by the fire and sat down himself. "Word travels fast, doesn't it? I've only now returned from Diagon Alley." Harry sat and shook his head at the offer of sweets. "Is there a problem with that?" "No, I'm just curious as to why. There are many needy students here. Why him?" There was something vaguely disapproving in Dumbledore's tone. "Would you believe me if I told you it was because he was there?" Harry asked. Dumbledore didn't need to know that there was a history with him and Snape. And maybe the Snape he knew wouldn't even come to be. Changing Snape's present meant possibly changing the future as well. The consequences might be grave. He probably shouldn't be thinking about Snape. But it was hard not to feel compassion for a man who'd served so well and literally got nothing but heartache and death for his efforts. With a faint frown on his face, Dumbledore stared at Harry. I sense there is more there than simply a random act of kindness. Of course he did. Possibly, Harry hedged. It's also possible that I have been poor enough in my life and wanted some things badly enough that I would be willing to give them to someone else. My lot was made better by random kindness. Perhaps I am only passing it along. A noble thought, I'm sure. And you don't wish to tell me. I can appreciate that. Harry rubbed the back of his neck and sighed. It's not that I don't, exactly. I just don't want to give too much information away yet. I hope to find my way home this summer. That earned him a sharp look. And who will buy Mr. Snape's robes next year? If he does well this year, then I'll make sure there's money for his robes. New robes and books wouldn't make a huge difference in the long run, but it might be enough for Snape to find some joy at school. I hadn't realized you felt that strongly about it. It puts him on equal footing with the other students. He won't stand out as much, or for the wrong reasons. That may not help him as much as you might hope it would. He comes from abject poverty. That is likely to leave its mark on him as much as starting school in patched robes. Poverty I can't fix. The other I could, and did. Is there a problem with it? Because really, Dumbledore should be grateful that one of his students would have a bit of a hand up. No, of course not. But I worry that you're starting down a path that won't do either of you any good. I've always felt that... No, he wasn't going to tell Dumbledore that maybe if someone had mentored Snape along the way, he might not have ended up in quite the dire misery he had. With any luck at all, Harry wouldn't be here beyond his first year. Dumbledore gave him another hard look and then sighed. Even in the few weeks that Harry had been in this time, he noticed that Dumbledore knew when to pull back and when to push forward. It was something he'd missed completely as a child. Harry crossed the barrier for platform 9 3/4, running late, of course. He was supposed to meet the older prefects just now. It would be interesting to be on the train as a chaperone. Dumbledore had told him it would be a good way to get to know the children. He hurried onto the platform, looking around. The prefects were grouped together near the head of the train. "Good morning," he said. "I'm Professor Potter, your chaperone for this year. Tell me your names, and I promise I won't remember any of them." A couple of them laughed. A tall, thin girl in elegant robes stepped forward and held out her hand. "I'm Aloys Haybert, and this is Bruno Daniel." She nodded to the hulking boy who towered over him. "We're head boy and head girl for this year." Aloys was Ravenclaw, and Bruno was a Hufflepuff. Between them, they introduced all the other prefects so quickly that Harry only caught a couple of their names. One name he did catch was Lucius Malfoy. Harry bit back a reply and clenched his hands in his pocket for a moment before he shook the hand that Malfoy offered. With his hair schoolboy short and his body thin rather than filled out as the adult had been, Malfoy looked more like Draco than the man Harry remembered. "It's good to meet you, Mr. Malfoy." The look Malfoy gave him said he didn't believe it, but he smiled. "And you, sir? What subject are you teaching?" "Muggle studies, and I'll be coaching Quidditch part-time." Malfoy sneered, but at Harry's sharp look, he seemed to think better of whatever it was he was going to say. Harry smiled at the rest of them. "This is standard procedure for all of you. We are here to make sure all the first years make it to the platform, especially the Muggleborns." He glared at Malfoy's snort. "I have a list of them," Aloys said, smiling. "I'll make sure we don't lose anyone." "Thank you," Harry said. "I'll see you all on the train." Harry watched as the prefects herded the various groups of children onto the train, making sure their luggage got to the right places. Several first years were fighting back tears at leaving their parents for the first time. He hadn't expected it to be quite as complicated as it was. When he'd been riding the train to school, he'd never even thought about the coordination that was required to get everyone where they were going. He turned around and saw Eileen Snape and Severus hurrying through the barrier. Eileen was sporting a black eye, and it was clear she was moving with some difficulty. Her cheeks were flushed, and Harry wanted to say something, but her look pleaded with him not to. "Mrs. Snape? Severus? It's good to see you both." "Mr. Potter," she said, not looking at him. "Thank you again for..." Snape groaned. He was already wearing the new robes, but his hair was greasy, and his ancient luggage looked to be held together by the strap around it. "Why don't we get your trunk stored on the train?" Harry pulled his wand and spelled the trunk to follow him. "Follow Mr. Potter and do what he says," Eileen said, and kissed his cheek. "I've got to get to work." "I'll make sure he gets on the train." She nodded and then hurried off. Snape's face was outraged. "I told her I could have come by myself. She didn't have to walk me like a baby." How many times had Harry wished for someone to see him off at the train? "She cares about you, you know." Snape glanced up at him. "I do know that, but..." Harry forced a laugh. "Let's get you situated." He led the way, and Snape's trunk bobbled along behind them. "Eloise?" She turned. "Yes, sir?" "This is Severus Snape. Can you see that his luggage gets on the train?" Eloise looked down at Snape and smiled at him. "Well, it's nice to meet you, Snape." She bent a bit and held out her hand. "I'm Eloise Habert." "Nice to meet you too, Miss Habert." He solemnly shook her hand. "Eloise or Habert. If you don't know someone, just use their last name until they give you leave to use their given name. The teachers are the only ones to call us by Mr. or Miss." "Thanks, Eloise." Snape smiled at her. She looked down at him. "Maybe you'll be sorted into Ravenclaw." Snape looked down, his face red. "I don't think so." "Why not?" Harry asked. "My mum says I'll be sorted into Slytherin." And he said it as if he didn't want it to be. That was a surprise, but given that he was a half-blood and poor, maybe it wasn't. "Well, if you don't want to be in Slytherin, then just tell the Sorting Hat that you don't want to be there." Eloise laughed. "Would that work?" "I have it on good authority that it will." Harry looked down at Snape. "You can be whatever you want to be." Snape looked at him disbelievingly, but not without some small amount of hope. "I don't think so." "You've got nothing to lose if you try, right?" Eloise said. "Let's get you on board." "Excuse me, Professor Potter." Someone tapped his shoulder. Harry turned around and was face to face with someone who looked like Harry would in about 40 or 50 years. Harry hadn't realized that green eyes were on both sides of his family.
"Sir?"
"I'm Edward Potter." "And I'm James Potter," James said, his chest puffed out.
"Don't interrupt Daddy, James."
"I'm Rose," Rose said. She was strikingly beautiful and elegantly dressed. In a way, she reminded Harry of Narcissa Malfoy. Not so much in the way she looked. She was small and her hair was dark brown, but in her bearing, as if she'd known her place in the world from birth. James also seemed to know his place in the world, and right now, it looked like he thought he was the center of the universe. Harry had tried to prepare himself for this meeting, but even knowing it was coming didn't make it any less bizarre. Clearly, this wasn't his father, not yet, just a spoiled 11-year-old. Edward cleared his throat. "I hope you don't mind the presumption, but I can't help but notice your name and the way you look." Fuck. Harry hadn't expected to be face down quite like this. He'd really thought that everyone would ignore the issue.
I'm not going to cause you any trouble if that's what you're worried about.
No, no, not at all, Edward said quickly, shaking his head. That wasn't what I meant. It's just that I thought you might be related to me. And clearly you know that you are. Are you one of my brother's children? Ignatius's son?
Not that he would have claimed me as such. Harry made it sound like he was resigned to it. How he hated having to lie. But there was no way around it. He needed to have a background. And this one was just too convenient to ignore.
He wouldn't have claimed any of his illegitimate children. More's the pity. Surprisingly, Edward's manner and tone said he disapproved of his brother's actions in that regard. Harry's estimation of his grandfather went up a notch.
Probably not a half-blood like me, anyway.
Your mother was a muggle? Or muggle-born? Rose asked, but she too sounded like she was actually interested in him as a potential family member rather than an interloper.
Muggle. She died a few years ago. He, Ignatius, paid for Salem Institute for me.
Better than he did for the others, Edward said.
I'm glad. Maybe he learned something about responsibility or compassion as he got older. You're the youngest by far.
They seemed willing to accept him without question. Harry found that so unlikely. He'd never thought they'd want to have anything to do with him.
How many others are there?
There were four that I know about. And clearly Edward thought there might be more.
And what happened to them? Harry asked carefully, his Auror instincts on high alert.
They have all left Wizarding Britain. Two were non-magical, brother and sister, and are living in Germany. I couldn't even find out their names. But Tamara Talbot went to Australia. I'm not sure what happened to Bradford Hanta. He disappeared completely. Of course, he sent you to the States.
As I said, I won't cause you any problem. I need to see the rest of the children to the train.
Harry took a step back and looked hopefully in that direction. Edward didn't seem to want to let Harry escape.
I'd like to talk to you again about this. Did you meet him before he died?
No, Harry shook his head. I never did.
If I came to Hogsmeade, would you have lunch or dinner with me?
Yes, I'd like that. The thought of knowing his family crackled through him, but it would be a mixed blessing. He'd have to lie to these good people.
The train whistle blew.
Let's get you on board, James, Harry said. You can take his trunk over there.
I'm taking my cat with me.
James held up his black cat. It was huge and hissed at Harry. It reminded him of Crookshanks.
Good idea, Harry said, leading James to the steps to get onto the train.
I need to go, don't I, Professor Potter?
James looked imploringly at him.
Say a proper goodbye to your mom and dad.
His parents hugged and kissed him while he squirmed like an embarrassed 11-year-old.
All of the other teachers had told him the first week was the hardest. And it wasn't that Harry didn't believe them either. He just hadn't expected it to be that hard. Harry made it to Saturday only by the skin of his teeth. He settled at one of the big tables in the library and started to pull out the books he'd been using. His hope that he'd find an easy solution was gone within the first few days of starting his research. There weren't that many time devices, and the ones that he'd found bore no resemblance to the device that had sent him here. Most of them, like time turners, went back in time, but not forward. It was infinitely harder to go forward, because the future was always shifting with each decision made. This past week, he'd been too tired to do more than flip the pages of the most recent book he was reading.
"What are you researching?" Severus asked him, sitting down at the same table without an invitation.
There was no point in lying about it.
Ways to travel through time.
"Why would you be interested in that?" Severus asked. And clearly, he thought it was a foolish notion.
Harry tried hard not to smile at his look.
Why not?
Snape looked up at him.
You just want to know?
You think that's unlikely?
I think you're more of a doer than a reader.
Severus was more perceptive than Harry would have guessed. He smiled.
That's true enough. How did you know?
It just seems that way. Severus opened his book and then sighed.
How are your classes? Harry asked when Severus didn't go back to his reading.
Good. I guess you know I was sorted into Ravenclaw.
The badge on your robes was my first clue.
Severus actually cracked a smile.
I took your advice about the hat.
You asked it not to sort you into Slytherin?
It said I was ambitious enough for Slytherin, but that I was also brave and that I loved to learn new things. It asked which I liked best.
And you said to learn new things?
I said I didn't want to be in Slytherin.
My mom was surprised.
I'll bet she was. Now, it's getting kind of late. Don't you have to go back to your common room?
I need to read this. He nodded toward the open book. Harry wasn't fooled.
When's it due?
Next week.
Bed.
Severus scowled at him, but put his books away before he ran off.
So, Harry, how has your week been? McGonagall asked, sitting down in one of the comfortable chairs in the teacher's lounge with a huge sigh.
Wake me up when it's spring, okay, Minerva?
Harry found it odd to call his teachers by their first names, but they'd all asked him to do so.
McGonagall chuckled.
That bad, is it?
No, it's just hectic, and I've got the most bizarre mix of liberal purebloods and clueless muggleborns. Everyone wants to correct me. I suspect the books aren't as correct as we'd like.
I thought you were muggleborn.
I'm a half-blood, but muggle-raised, and clearly not as informed as I thought I was.
Well, that was hardly surprising, since even when he'd been in the muggle world, he hadn't seen much of it. At the very least, his information was 20 years out of date.
Are you following the syllabus?
Yes. Next year, if I stay, I'm going to find a better book.
Good idea. I've always thought this class could use an overhaul, but there's been no one to do it. I believe the text you're using is from the turn of the century.
Pretty close, actually. I didn't see it until I arrived, and then it was too late to do anything about it.
Any standout students?
Not yet. What about you? He asked.
Of the first years, there are a few good ones. Lily Evans, for one, McGonagall said.
Since I don't get them until third year, I haven't had a lot of dealing with the first years. I've run into a few during patrols, and that's about it.
Her mouth tightened a bit.
And from the sound of what you're not saying, not in a good way.
James Potter and Sirius Black are a handful separately. Together, they're...
Harry shook his head, words failing him.
I'd like to spank both of them.
At McGonagall's horrified expression, he laughed.
Oh, I wouldn't do it. But I can fantasize, can't I?
A young man your age should be fantasizing about something else.
She waggled her eyebrows at him. The pain in his chest that never quite faded flared sharply. He looked away.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry.
No, I recently lost my fiancé, and I'm not quite over it yet.
He hoped he would find his way home somehow. This must be so hard on Ginny. Harry thought. At least she had her family to support her. Except, in the most oblique of ways, he didn't even have someone he could talk to about her, or any of his lost friends.
I'm sorry, she sighed. It's tough sometimes. Is that why you came here to teach?
Among other things. I'm still hoping it will work out, and then I'll be able to go home. Even though he'd settled into this life, he couldn't bear to think about having to stay forever.
I hadn't realized you didn't plan to stay.
McGonagall sounded faintly disapproving, as if teaching for only one term wasn't done. I'm not sure what I'm planning at this point. Harry sighed. That he wasn't making more progress identifying the device was a constant source of frustration for him.
So, tell me about Mr. Black and Mr. Potter. They drive you mad, yes?
Black knows virtually nothing about the Muggle world, but makes disparaging jokes about it anyway. James is a bit better, but together they are a handful. In general, Harry didn't have a lot of problem with discipline, but both James and Sirius pushed him to the limit. James seemed to think that because Harry was his cousin, he should be granted special privileges, and was quite displeased to learn that Harry treated everyone the same. Potter rides roughshod over everyone, and Black eggs him on. I suspect they are both just high-spirited, but they are both good boys. McGonagall's smile dimmed a bit. I've noticed you've taken an interest in Severus Snape. He's as sly as a fox, that boy. I'm surprised he wasn't sorted into Slytherin. Harry didn't appreciate her tone and frowned. I think he's a good boy, too, and a very smart one. I don't argue his intelligence, but there's something about him. Poverty isn't a crime, Harry said, probably more sharply than he needed to. She looked at him and then down at her hands. No, of course not. I can see that you've championed him. I think he has a lot to offer, and if someone points him in the right direction, he'll use it for good rather than something else. And with that, Harry stood up. He had nothing else to say on the subject, so he left the room.
Thank you for meeting me, Edward said, and stood and held out his hand.
I'm intrigued that you asked. I mean...
Harry looked away.
No, I understand. Edward cleared his throat. You're my nephew. I'd like for you to be part of my family.
Harry wanted that. He wanted to get to know his grandfather, even if it were in these circumstances.
Why? Why would you even care? Why now?
You mean after all this time? I only found out about all of you right before Ignatius's death.
Edward sighed.
I came into his office at the ministry, and one of his children, Miss Talbot, was leaving. I confronted him about it, and he did worse than deny it. He said he didn't actually consider her a person because her mother was a Muggle.
That was so horrible. Harry could not conceive of having a child and rejecting him or her so thoroughly. For any reason.
Oh, I don't know what to say.
Harry looked down. I'm grateful for the education he provided me, even if I never met him.
I was appalled by his attitude, but there was nothing I could do until he died. Since his wife had died before him, all of his assets came back to me. I made a point of tracking down the children that I'd known about, but none of them wanted anything to do with me. I don't blame them. It was just happenstance that you showed up at Hogwarts when you did.
Right. I don't want anything from you monetarily, but I wouldn't mind...
a family.
He missed the Weasleys, all of them, like a severed limb. But for the first time in 13 years, he would be completely alone at Christmas. Why that should be the thing that cut so deeply, when his whole world was gone, Harry couldn't say.
I've never had much of a family.
Edward smiled. I would like that. I would like to get to know you. You seem like such a good boy.
Harry tried not to bristle at the use of the word boy. He wasn't quite old enough to find it amusing yet.
Oh, don't look like that. At my age, you tend to think of anyone as young as you as a boy. I know you're responsible for yourself, and probably have been for longer than you should have been.
Harry laughed. It was hard to stay annoyed at someone who was so genial.
Right then, I'd like to get to know you, and Rose too.
James is part of the package too, you know.
Of course. He's a...
handful?
Rose and I know it, and we make it worse by spoiling him, but...
Edward shrugged.
He's our son, and we waited a long time for him to come along. That really is a problem with the wizarding world. Purebloods are far too inbred. We're having fewer and less powerful children. I'm going to encourage him to marry a Muggleborn. Then he's got a shot at powerful children. Harry wanted to tell him that it worked, but he just smiled. I expect you're right. James seems powerful enough. He's as powerful as any pureblood child, but he's not nearly as powerful as, say, a half-blood. A very young Rose Murda came and took their order, and lunch arrived quickly. I understand you've taken to mentoring young Severus Snape, Edward said after a mouthful of his lunch. Harry choked on his stew. What? How did you hear that? And what possible difference could it make? Surely you realize you live in a small community. Madame Mulkin mentioned it to Rose that very day. She was taken with your generosity. Oh, well, I know what it's like to want something and be denied. I'm sorry, I'm sure you do, but it was a gallant gesture. I like Severus. He's quite brilliant, and I'm hoping starting him off on the right path will help him. He comes from such an impoverished background that you will need to do more than buy his books and robes. How do you know so much about him? Edward looked at him and sighed. It's a small community, and I mean all of Wizarding Britain. His mother was one of us. If that is so, why didn't anyone try to help her? She wouldn't take it. Her father was not wealthy, but the prince's name is old and respected. She was determined to marry Tobias Snape, and her father said he'd disown her if she did. She is as stubborn as he was, and most people seem to feel that she's made her bed, so she should lie in it. That's harsh, considering how uncomfortable the bed is. Or she might have got out of it by now. I understand that some of her friends tried to help, but she wouldn't take any aid. And she could have gone home and taken Severus with her. Her father died only 2 years ago. That he'd never seen his grandson was a heartache for him. He could have left him something. Harry knew it was a long shot. Truthfully, aside from a crumbling manor house, there wasn't a lot left of the prince's estate. And what there was went to a cousin. I never said he wasn't as stubborn as she was. I guess Severus comes by it honestly. Do you know him well? I'm doing some research, and he spends a lot of time in the library. I'd heard he was quite bright. He borders on brilliant, but he's got other issues. I'm sure he does. The robes and books will no doubt help, but nothing is going to erase the life he had before he came to Hogwarts. Harry knew that very well, but he could help, and he would. 2 days before the start of Christmas holidays, Harry finally found time to get back to the library. Between schoolwork to grade, and Quidditch practice, and endless detentions, there wasn't time for him to sleep some weeks, let alone do detailed research. He wanted his life back, and he wasn't finding the information he needed. If he were home, he'd be having Christmas with the Weasleys. Molly would put out a spread that would make the table groan. Ron and Hermione would be there, snogging in the corner. Bill and Fleur. When he'd left, Victoire had been born, and they were talking about another child. Andromeda and little Teddy. And Jenny. Damn. He took a deep breath to ease the tightness in his chest. He promised to stay at school for a week to help out with the children who weren't going home, but he was spending Christmas with the Potters. The invitation came as something of a surprise. Though he'd enjoyed his lunch with Edward quite a bit, he hadn't expected this much from them. Professor Potter? Severus's voice penetrated his reverie. Mr. Snape, isn't it a bit late for you to be haunting the library? I'm working on a paper that's due tomorrow. I wanted to add more to it. Severus glanced at his books. Still working on time travel? Yes, I am. Harry looked up at him and sighed. Severus's hair was particularly greasy today, and he'd heard the older children tease him about it more than once. Maybe it wasn't his place, but someone had to say something. Mr. Snape, you should wash your hair.
Severus's face turned red and he looked down. What difference does it make? It's my hair, not yours.
Yes, it certainly is. But your classmates and I must look at it.
Then don't.
Would you rather I not talk to you?
Harry knew it was a risk, but it might drive home the point to him.
Severus's eyes flashed with anger, and for a second he thought Severus might explode.
I want to talk to you.
I'm glad you feel that way. I like talking to you too. But you still have to wash your hair.
It's not that I don't want to, it's
just that there isn't always shampoo to do it with?
Harry knew exactly what that was like. He'd used whatever came his way in terms of toiletries, because the Dursleys would not buy him anything. When he went back to the Dursleys for the summer holiday, he'd taken enough with him to last a month or more, and then he'd hoard what was there to last until the fall.
When we didn't have any, Mom said I should just rinse my hair with water.
Severus's face was red, and his tone had dropped to a whisper.
I know, but there is plenty of shampoo and soap at Hogwarts, and I think you should make a point of using it.
Really?
I know I should, but I hate for people to tell me what to do.
Harry bit his lip not to smile. He could see the adult so clearly in the child.
I'm telling you, and it's in your best interest to listen to me. I won't lie to you.
Everyone lies. Severus was too damn young to know that with so much certainty.
You're right. Most people do lie. But I'll try not to lie to you.
But he would, for as long as he was here. That bit hard into Harry's conscience.
Try. Severus looked skeptical. That's not nearly the same thing.
No, it's not. But sometimes, that's all you can have.
Severus seemed to think about it for a moment.
I guess you're right.
Harry wasn't sure what he was expecting as he flew into the Potter home. For all that he'd heard and what he'd known in his own time, the Potters were quite well off, and a mansion would not have been out of the question. While the house was large and beautifully decorated, it wasn't on the scale of Malfoy Manor, for which he was grateful.
"Come in. Can I get you an eggnog or something stronger?" Rose said as she ushered him into the drawing room. Large and airy, the room had bookcases lining one wall, and a large fire burning brightly along another. French doors led out to a patio, and Harry could see a garden lit beyond it.
"Eggnog," Harry said, handing her the presents he'd bought for all of them. Buying something for James had turned out to be a bit more complicated since he was one of Harry's students. He'd settled for a book on Quidditch that had just come out.
Am I early?
Not at all, Edward said, coming in and holding out his hand. It's good to see you again, Harry.
And you, sir? Harry wondered if it was rude to ask if anyone else was coming. He thought this was going to be a party. Christmas Eve has always been just for the family. Unfortunately, there's not much family left on either side, I'm afraid.
Edward looked down and sighed. My father's brothers, Charles, married Dora Black, and they only had one son, Devlin. He's in Romania, raising dragons.
Like Charlie.
Harry smiled at that.
Oh, wait. Charlie hadn't been born yet.
He'll be here tomorrow for the day, but it's hard to get him away right now. This is their breeding season.
I would have thought it was the spring. Not that Harry knew much about dragons, except to be very wary of them.
Apparently, the breed of dragon he works with needs to be closed in a barn to hatch their eggs, and they prefer to do it in the winter.
Edward smiled. Devlin is a lovely boy.
He's hardly a boy, Rose said with a smile. He must be close to 40.
I expect you're right, my dear, Edward said. As I was saying, aside from him, there wasn't anyone until James came along, and he was a bit of a surprise.
James appeared at the door. Why was I a surprise?
You had to have been pregnant for a few months. I couldn't have been a surprise.
Rose shrugged.
I was a bit old to find myself pregnant, but I was very, very happy about it.
Of course you were, James said. You got me.
Yes, we did.
James took this as his due and sat down for a moment before jumping up. I'm going to go see if Sirius can come over tomorrow.
Shouldn't he be with his family? Edward asked.
I don't think he likes his family very much. They believe all that pure blood stuff.
James closed the door behind him.
He's a whirlwind, isn't he?
Harry hoped he sounded neutral. James tried his patience to the limit. After getting to know the child, it had been surprisingly easy not to think of him as his parent. It might get harder as James aged, but for now, Harry was the adult, and James was the child.
It's all we can do to keep up with him, Rose sighed. As Edward was saying, you and James are all there is of this generation.
You don't consider the rest of Ignatius's children as part of this generation, but you do me?
Edward shook his head. If they took the name Potter, I would claim them as kin.
He held up a hand. I completely understand why they reject it. They have been shabbily treated. I doubt I would want the name of a man who so thoroughly rejected me either. You're the only exception.
Well, Harry said, looking down. He hated lying.
He did pay for school, and my mom wanted me to have his name. I think because I looked so like him.
All of his children look like him, but he refused to acknowledge anyone who was a muggle as a real person, even when he produced magical children with them.
Edward shook his head, sounding perplexed by the notion.
I don't understand that thinking, Harry said. There were far too many people who still thought that way, even after Voldemort.
I don't either, Edward said.
I think that's a bigger surprise. And one of the few completely pleasant ones Harry had had since arriving in this time.
Not really. There are many people, purebloods included, who believe that all people have worth. Dumbledore attracts them.
I guess he does that.
Dumbledore was amazingly consistent. Harry would say that for him.
Speaking of Dumbledore and Hogwarts, Rose said, how do you like teaching?
It wasn't very subtle, but Harry let it go. He didn't want to think about what Voldemort was doing, or he might be inclined to do something about it. And he wanted to go home, to his home in time someday.
I'm rather surprised by how much I do like it.
Edward's brows creased. You took a job thinking you wouldn't like it? Were you that desperate?
Not desperate quite like that. However, the job sort of fell into my lap, as it were, and I would have been a fool not to take it.
Is there something you'd rather do?
The question was oh so casually asked, but it was clear that Edward wanted to help him.
Actually, not now. I might have wanted to be an Auror, but now I'm quite happy to be teaching. I like having an active role in helping shape the way children think. And he genuinely liked most of the children, especially the younger ones. They had the attention span of a gnat a lot of the time, but they were usually eager to learn, especially if they were in his class, which wasn't required.
Harry put several books down on the table where Severus was sitting. Despite the late hour, the library was packed, and he was sure Severus wouldn't mind sharing his table. Severus looked up, and his eye was black.
How did you get that black eye?
With some difficulty, Harry managed to keep his voice even. It was painfully obvious where he'd gotten the injury.
What? Not how was your holiday, Mr. Snape? Just an explanation that might...
He stopped, realizing he was probably about to cross the line. Somehow, even with that scowl, he didn't look that angry.
You're right. How was your holiday, Mr. Snape?
It was fine.
How did you get...
It's fine, okay? If I wanted to tell you about it, I would have done.
Severus looked down at his book, studiously ignoring Harry.
Mr. Snape, I think you're skirting the line here.
Harry gave him a hard look, and held it until Severus looked down.
Now, how did you get the black eye?
My father hit me, Severus spat out, angry now.
Are you satisfied?
Although spanking an unruly child sometimes helped, Harry didn't approve of it. Punching a 12-year-old in the eye was not acceptable in any civilized society, no matter what the offense. Harry took a deep breath and forced down his need to curse Tobias Snape.
No, I'm rather upset by this. Why didn't your mother heal you?
Because if she did, my father would have just done it again. Do you know how much I hate Muggles? I hate them!
It wasn't all Muggles who did this, just one specific one.
Harry could see he wasn't going to make headway on this right now.
Why didn't you go see Madame Pomfrey?
Severus shrugged.
I meant to go yesterday when I got back, but I never got the chance.
I'd say it's time for you to go. Right now. Harry made it an order.
I'm busy.
Severus looked pointedly down at his parchment.
It will keep.
Mr. Snape, now. Severus stood up and scowled again.
See? This is why I don't want to talk about it in the first place.
Right. Some mean and inconsiderate teacher might make you go and get your injured eye fixed. That didn't even get a smile from Severus.
Go.
Harry nodded towards the door. Unlike most terms when Harry had been a student, the end of the school term had snuck up on him. He'd never considered the level of effort involved in teaching and grading until he was doing it. And as much as he did enjoy it, the amount of detailed work was staggering.
Mr. Snape, don't you have a train to catch? Harry asked, looking up from his final grading to see Severus standing in the doorway of his office.
I've got a bit of time. I wanted to...
Severus took a breath.
To thank you. Pure pleasure washed over Harry. It was wonderful to see Severus starting to develop social skills. Maybe he wouldn't end up the bitter, antisocial man Harry had known.
It was my pleasure. Since you got top marks all year, I'll meet you in August at Diagon Alley to buy next year's robes and books.
Severus looked gobsmacked, and then more suspicious than Harry had seen him look in a long time.
Why would you do that?
Didn't I say I would pay for your books and robes if you did well in school? If everything went well, and he did manage to find a way home this summer, Harry would make arrangements with Dumbledore to see that Severus had what he needed for the rest of his years at Hogwarts. He'd always be on a level playing field with his classmates. What he did after that would be his choice.
But you didn't really mean it. I mean, why would you?
He looked right at Severus. Because I know what it's like to be without. I know what it's like to never measure up because you don't have what other people have.
But,
Severus trailed off,
what's in it for you?
The satisfaction of knowing I've done something good for someone else?
A lot of people did help me, and I'm paying them back through you.
I don't understand that. I know you don't. I guess you'll just have to accept it's one of my many quirks. As long as you do well, I'll see that you have new books and new robes at the beginning of every year. Severus stood there for a moment or two, his brow creased.
All right, he said finally. Thank you.